Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Possibly the best team in the NHL, the Washington Capitals. That's our play-by-play call today with their voice, John Walton.
The puck for Alster, clear toward an empty net. It won't have the distance, but the Capitals aren't going to ice it either. Now as Oshie picks it up, he scores! T.J. Oshie into an empty net with 12.2 seconds to go. That's all the time remaining.
T.J. Oshie story. You'll love this story, Sean. It was the Sochi Olympics, so it would have been what, last year? Snowstorm. And Dick Girardi's car was not at the hotel. We had to go out to the airport to get it. And he calls me up. It was a Saturday morning. It's snowing like crazy. And he says, hey, could you do me a big favor? He says, could you pick me up? We'll run out to the airport together. I said, yeah, sure. Great. No problem. So I go and I pick him up, and it's really slow going. Well, I have the United States-Russia hockey game on the radio on Sirius, and they're in the shootout. And Oshie comes in, Oshie scores. All right, so then the Russians get up there. They're going to go against Quick, the goaltender. And then it goes back and forth, and every time he says, and now for the next U.S. skater. And Dick yells at the radio, Patrick Kane, pick Kane. It's Oshie. Oshie comes up. Oshie scores. Then it's the Russians' turn. Yeah, and you can. And the difference between the Olympic Games and what you see in the NHL is that you can keep going back to the same guy. You're not. It's not mandated you change guys. So Dick says, "Pick Kane." Now Oshie comes back out. Oshie scores. Then the Russians do their deal. They said, "Now it's time for the United States." Dick says, "Pick Kane." I finally looked over. I said, Oshie keeps scoring. Is there any particular reason you want them to pick Patrick Kane? He goes, yeah, he's the only guy I know.
Yeah, because I think he played for the St. Louis Blues at that point before going to Washington.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was playing for the Blues at the time. He and I still laugh. He's the only guy I know. Pick Kane. Oh my goodness. Joe Garagiola had himself a great career and apparently a great life. And when he kids about, look, I wasn't even the best player in my own block on the hill in St. Louis, you know, the guy in his block was Yogi Berra. So no, he was not the best guy in his own block. But he was a good enough player to play in the major leagues for years, play with four different teams. Hit .257, won a World Series in 46, and then he had to do something with his post-career. Because, I mean, back then, baseball players made some money, but not a lot. So he got into broadcasting. And he wrote books, and he did an outstanding job on the Major League Game of the Week. Worked with Kirk Gowdy a little bit, worked with Tony Kubek, eventually worked with Vin Scully, and also did some local work as well, including, of late, the Arizona Diamondbacks, till he retired in 2013. And he also was the host of the Today Show, and he also hosted the Tonight Show. And he had the ability, with his storytelling and his wit and self-deprecation, to be a very popular figure on TV.
He had the honor of interviewing both Paul McCartney and John Lennon on The Tonight Show back in 1968.
Yeah. So, had himself a great life. He was 90 years old. His sons have done well. His son at one point was the GM of the Diamondbacks and now works with Major League Baseball in the front office. He has another son who's on as a sportscaster in Detroit. So he's 90 years old, an American original, Joe Garagiola. We have Larry Anderson on today. We're going to talk about the Phillies. And, of course, News Radio 1070 WKOK is your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. So you hear plenty of Larry Anderson this year. Looking forward to it very much. This is an important setup year for the Phillies. I mean, are there high expectations? No, there are not high expectations. But I think Matt Leon from KYW, I thought, phrased it very well on Monday's show with us. He said, look, he said, the difference between the front office and the fans is, he said, the fans actually have been ready for this long before the front office was. That's why he thinks there are going to be people going to the ballpark, because they've been ready for this, that transition into the younger, let's get on board early team. And that's what I'm looking to explore with Larry Anderson on today's show about that. I mean, they've gone from one of the bottom five minor league organizations to a top seven minor league organization in 18 months. That, to me, is impressive. Did you see the Twitter battle between Ohio State and Jim Harbaugh?
I saw a couple of tweets that Harbaugh posted, and I was like, okay, what's this all about?
Oh, it's just more of a mess. It has to do with the spring practice. And Urban Meyer actually he was at some event, and this doesn't have to do with Urban Meyer, by the way. But he was at some event, and they asked him about taking the team down to Florida. He says, we'll look into it. He says, but, you know, I said, I don't know if I want to, you know, take away their free time. And so it was just a rather logical, nothing to do with Michigan answer. Okay. He says, yeah, I don't really know. You know, they get the only X amount of time off. I don't really know if I want to take their time away from them. You know, it's something, you know, we'd look into, but, you know, it was an answer. Okay. Well, then, at some soccer event, Gene Smith, who is the athletic director at Ohio State, somebody asked him about. He said he told reporters in Columbus that he considered taking his school's football team on a spring trip if, quote, we were jump starting our program, and then added in if the Buckeyes were in a different place. Now, those were considered to be a shot at Michigan football. So Harbaugh quickly tweets out, good to see Director Smith being relevant again after the tattoo fiasco. Welcome back. Oh, boy. Ezekiel Elliott, who's moving on to the NFL draft. Welcome to the big house, coach. Better luck next time. Gene Smith. Statement. My comments at a soccer press conference yesterday were not meant to discredit our rival. I apologize to UM student athletes and my good friend Ward Manuel. He's now the new AD at Michigan. We at Ohio State look forward to continuing the greatest rivalry in collegiate sports. Now, Harbaugh's also, when Butch Jones said something, Kirby Smart said something, quickly responded there as well. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Twitter, you know, is 10 years old, Joe.
Yeah, and just, Twitter's just celebrated its 10th anniversary earlier this week.
And never made a dime. Twitter's not profitable. Never made a dime. But, you know, you see something like this, lay low. Lay low. There's no need to say anything. Just lay low. You don't have to, you don't have to go there and mix it up. You don't have to mix it up. Just lay low. Kirby Smart, meanwhile, the head coach of Georgia, is not going to allow any of his players to transfer to Miami, where Mark Richt is. Now, on the surface, that seems, okay, well, he's just trying to protect his program. You know what? These kids didn't sign on to play for him. If you're any good, be securing yourself. It's all right. And we don't know if he's any good or not. He's been a defensive coordinator. He's never been a head coach. Plaintiffs in the antitrust suit against the NCAA are seeking more than $240 million in damages to account for the full cost of attendance scholarships that were not available over the last 5 years, according to USA Today. The suit, filed in March 2014, seeks to cover athletes in football, men's and women's basketball, who are arguing that if cost of attendance based on scholarships had been in place years ago, they would have received more lucrative scholarships. The case can reach back as far as 5 years, according to the report, and also seeks damages for athletes in those sports that have received or are still receiving athletic scholarships that don't cover full cost of attendance since the suit was initially filed. More than $720 million could be at stake in this case because under antitrust law, the amount is trebled if a jury decides to award damages to a plaintiff. Although the NCAA and 11 conferences are named as defendants, other Division I schools and conferences are alleged to have been co-conspirators, according to USA Today. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. This is just another... This is another big one. Hey, this is another big one that they have to take a long look at. Will they get it? I don't know. Now, obviously, the Ed O'Bannon thing was completely different. And that's where Mark Emmert handed it to them in a silver platter. I thought it was really brilliant testimony. Where he started doing the ivory tower thing, and, you know, these are our goals and ideals. And the ivory jury sits there and goes, what the heck's he talking about? Remember that thing I said I've been saying for weeks, you know, for a long time now? Not just weeks, but a long time in the show. There's a major difference between being book smart and being wise. By the way, you can be both book smart and have wisdom. And believe me, you absolutely can. No question about it. But there are some people that are incredibly book smart that have very little wisdom. Just the way it is. But this is all part of that O'Bannon case. And again, the O'Bannon case is the one where the star witness was Mark Emmert, and the O'Bannon people were high-fiving with each sentence. Like, okay, great, it's going to go our way. And I've said many, many times, look, it's okay. Right? Tell everybody the path of the money. Now, who's the attorney in this, by the way? So there's a second attorney in this, which is the Jenkins versus the NCAA case. The attorney there is Jeffrey Kessler. Tom Brady's attorney. Thank you. And Jenkins is one of them, but also Nigel Hayes of Wisconsin is also has his name on it. But the big mistake they made in all this, to me, just tell them where the money goes. That's all you have to do. All right, we get this money. What do we do with it? Okay. Do we throw pool parties? Do we, you know? No. The women's soccer program cannot sustain itself. A chunk of the money goes to the women's soccer program. That way they can go out and they can compete. The women's volleyball program, okay, does not make enough money to sustain itself. So we make up the difference and give them the money they're sustaining. The baseball program cannot support itself. They relied on just the revenue they brought in. They couldn't make it. So, again, the football, basketball money gets siphoned off there. I've said many times here, but I will say it again. The wrestling program, universally loved by everybody up and down the valley, 5 national championships, 6 years. But $750,000 in the red. That's not their fault. It's just the nature of the sport. I know people say, how could it be? They sell out. They sell out. Just look. Okay. Slow down. They sell out, but also the ticket prices aren't that high, and they don't have a TV contract. They don't have a radio contract. Okay? That's how you get behind. And once the new TV contract is done with the Big Ten, if it comes to fruition, I know Cale Sanderson wants to, and I completely understand why. He wants to start chartering. Well, I don't blame him for that. Who wouldn't, especially with the success that they've had? I know he'd like to charter. Well, guess what? That's more expensive. It's fine. They've earned it. And if they get the money to do it, fine. That's where, again, that football, basketball money comes into play. This is what Emmert should have done. You tell them in no uncertain terms, the Title IX is an unfunded federal mandate. Idealistically, do we want equal opportunity? Absolutely. I want my son and my daughter to have the same chance to play sports at every single level. Which then means, in turn, I want them to have every chance to get any job they possibly can out there at the same level. So idealistically, everybody, I think, not everybody, but most people are on the same page. Idealistically, most people feel that way. Okay, now let's go from the ideology of that's great, everybody gets equal opportunity. Title IX means men's and women's sports. Great. That's ideology. Now let's get into realism. How do you pay for it? The big money tree in the back? Or do you have a great TV contract and a great radio contract and a sold-out stadium for your football games, and you have a great radio contract and a great TV contract, and you sell more tickets at a higher price for your basketball games, and there's revenue sharing in football and basketball, and there's revenue sharing in the NCAA tournament for basketball, and there's revenue sharing in bowl games. That money goes into football and men's basketball, and then it gets siphoned out to make sure everybody has the best chance of competing. Since 1992-93, when Penn State joined the Big Ten, Penn State's won 29 national championships, more than any other school in the Big Ten, by a wide margin. And that happens because they've had the funds to do it, courtesy of the fact that football and men's basketball have been profitable in each of those 24 years. It's the way it goes. It's the way it is. And a normal business model, you would sit down and you would look at, say, women's basketball losing about $2.5 to $3 million a year. normal business model, you look at wrestling losing between a half million and a million and a half a year. In a normal business model, do you keep that division of the company going? But this isn't the normal division of a company. This is intercollegiate athletics, and you have a way to pay for it because you're two incredibly profitable divisions. In this case, the most recent numbers for football show a $36 million profit. The most recent numbers put out for men's basketball show a $6.2 million profit. That money then gets siphoned to make sure you're ultra-competitive in everything else. On top of the revenue, those sports bring in themselves, too. Wrestling brings in revenue. Women's volleyball brings in revenue. Just not enough to cover all the bills. This is how you make up for it. But they didn't explain where the money went. And they basically, when he was done, they might as well have put the verdict on a platter and had Mark Emmert deliver it to the O'Bannon table himself. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll get to the sports bozo of the day a bit later in the show in the final segment. We'll do that. Going to deal with coaching mobility. Very pleased to bring in Larry Anderson. Larry, welcome. It's great to have you part of the WKOK family with the Phillies now on the air here.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Good to talk to you. How's everything?
Everything's going really well. And what about camp? What, you know, this is a different camp. It's an interesting camp. So what have been a couple things on your checklist that you've gone through this time that may have been a little bit different than the past?
I think one of the big things is the energy level, the young kids that are coming along, getting a chance to see them, some of the young arms that we've gotten in the trades, some of the, well, Nick Williams, the outfielder, although he's been sent back to minor league camp now, but I think overall it's just been the energy, the excitement of the young kids coming in has made a big difference. And of course, I think Pete McCannon, for me, has done just a terrific job. He's honest with these guys, like a situation with Howard. He talks with Howard. He's talked with Chooch, two of the guys that obviously the mainstays of our great five-year run of winning the division. But, you know, with those guys understanding that their roles might be somewhat diminished, and he's honest with them. He has fun. He enjoys it. And he just says, you know what, you guys just be on time and play hard. That's all I ask. And they're doing it, and they've really responded to him.
What about the pitching part of it, which obviously you'd know so much about? How do you think things have fallen into place, and are all the spots now set, or with a couple weeks to go, is it still up in the air in a couple spots?
Well, it looks like, you know, the rotation for the most part is close to set with Hellickson, Nola, Morton, who's pitching tonight, and Jared Eichhoff, who threw, and the last time out, threw his first spring training A game, and although he gave up a couple of bombs, he struck out seven in his four innings and looked really good, had a great curveball. And you could just see the rust was there, but between Nola and Eichhoff, two guys that I'm excited about, just watching them, especially for young pitchers, the way they go about their business and the way they handle themselves on the mound is really has been nice to watch. It's been fun to watch. And then it looks like the fifth spot is going to come down between Velasquez and Morgan. And to me, you can't go wrong with either of them. Morgan doesn't have the power stuff that Velasquez has, but he knows how to pitch. And they're both competitors. They're both aggressive on the mound. They're quick workers. And, even today in the clips that we get, Bob McClure was actually talking about, you know, the possibility. I don't know that it will happen, but he said it has been tossed around of a six-man rotation, I think partly because of the job that Morgan and Velasquez have done this spring fighting for that fifth spot. Overholzer, a left-hander who was kind of vying for that spot, he's out of options, and it looks like he's going to be in the bullpen. In fact, he's on this trip. He pitched yesterday, and I think they want to pitch him today, back-to-back days, get him accustomed to that. So it's been really, for me, it's been really exciting to watch these young kids, watch the arms, and, of course, the veterans, Hellickson and Charlie Morton. have done a nice job. And I think it, you know, if this team, if the pitching gives them a chance to be in games, the offense, I don't think is going to be any powerhouse. But like, I just walked up to Pete McCann a few minutes ago, and he's like, "You ever seen squeeze bunts in spring training?" And I said, "Not three of them, not three successful ones in the spring." But he said, "That's what we got to do. We're going to have to manufacture runs. We're not the Blue Jays. We can't sit back and wait for the 3-run home run. Not that, you know, a guy like Franco or Ruff doesn't have the power, or Cameron Ruff, but, you know, it's not a power laden team. So they have to do the little things." And that's something that's another thing that Pete has really stressed this spring.
Hellickson and Morton are not aces, but they've both pitched in big games in division runs. Have they added a presence that you like?
Yes, I think. I think they're veteran presence. Hellickson, he threw the other day, I think, was it five innings of no-hit ball. The one thing, you don't see a lot of emotion from him. He just goes out there and wants to compete. And I think that's the biggest thing is these guys, you know, just watching the way they go about their business. And they're certainly a lot like Harang was last year, where they're not afraid to help the young guys. They're not worried about somebody taking their job. They're thinking about, how can we make this team better as a team? How can we win? And you do that, I think, by veteran guys stepping up and helping these younger pitchers. And to the young pitcher's credit, they'll pick the years of Hellickson. And not that they're old guys, but they have been around. They have more of a track record. So it's everybody's on the same page, and everybody just, they want to come out and win. And, you know, Steve, everybody's talking, well, the Phillies, are they going to win 67 games? Can they outdo what they did last year? Can they win 70? And, you know, everybody's picking us fourth or fifth in the division. But you don't tell that to these players. I mean, these guys aren't buying into that. And I think it shows this spring. Now, the fact that they're, 14-6, I don't think anybody should have expectations of them winning the division. And I'm not going to say it can't happen. But these guys are coming in there with the belief they can, and that's all that matters. If they're believing in themselves, and plus some of these young kids coming up from minor leagues, they're starting to get the winning attitude, the winning feeling. To me, it's all coming together. It's certainly going in the right direction.
I think everybody feels it's going in the right direction, Larry. Obviously, in what I do, broadcasting for Penn State, you know, I'm always around 18 to 22, 23-year-olds. Jack Hamm and I, on the football broadcast many times, have talked about players trying to understand time, score, situation, and it's not always successful. We've seen the NCAA basketball tournament, that's been an issue. How long did it take you to get a feel for situation and so forth in your career, and what kind of a challenge is that for young players on the Phillies?
Well, I think part of it is, back in my day, when you're a rookie, you just kept your mouth shut, and if a veteran was going to help you, he'd help you, and otherwise you had to figure it out yourself. It's a little different now. I feel like I was a late bloomer. Most of my time in the big leagues came later in my career than early in my career. With 9.5 years in the minor leagues, you know, up and down. I think that in itself helped me a lot. But I think, you know, once getting to the big leagues and getting established, and then realizing, and for me, when I was coaching or even in spring training with some of these young pitchers, trying to explain to them that the scoreboard's going to dictate a lot of what you need to do, what you need to know. If you just pay attention to the scoreboard, you know, the inning, the score, the situation, a lot of that's going to dictate about what you should be doing on the mound. And it does take a while, but I think if we start with these kids early and get them to understand that every situation's different, but, you know, understanding who's a hitter, who's on deck, thinking ahead instead of thinking in the present time, you have to think ahead a little bit, and I think that it varies with each player, and obviously it also varies with the retention of some players to tell them something and say, well, they'll remember it or use it. It doesn't always happen right away, but I think they are trying to get them to think that way, and it certainly makes things easier for you when you start figuring things out like that. You know, what should I do here? I don't want to make a mistake or something like that, which that in itself, I don't want guys thinking I can't make a mistake, because you're going to make it if you think that. But it does. It takes a while, some guys longer than others. But I think some of our young kids are really, they're getting a grasp of it, and especially the young pitchers. They've got a great idea when they're on the mound. And it actually does surprise me somewhat that they're as far advanced mentally on the mound than I remember myself being anyway.
One final thing, Larry, before I let you go, and we appreciate the time you're giving us today very much. I talked about the pitching part. You and I both know there's a lot of talent within this organization that now, in an 18-month span, brought themselves into being one of the top seven in terms of minor league depth. How important is the patience part of it on the Phillies organization that I'd rather bring a guy up maybe a game or two too late than maybe a game or two too early, because you have some talent in this organization that eventually is going to make an impact?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to understanding the makeup of each player. I think for me, one of the things that really stood out with Eichhoff, Nola, and Morgan last year getting their first taste in the big leagues, was when they had a bad game, and most of them had a bad game the first one or two times out, the way they responded to that. It was like you would have thought they threw a no-hitter the time before, when they basically got their lunch handed to them, but you didn't see that. They didn't go out there feeling like, oh no, what happened last time? I got to do this right or that. It was a game they had. It didn't go their way, and they filed it. It was over. And that to me is huge for a young pitcher to be able to do that, to put it away. And it's like, when things are going good, everybody's the greatest player, the greatest guy, or whatever. But how are guys when things are going bad? How do they handle adversity? And these young kids have certainly handled it well, and it's been probably the most impressive thing I've seen out of them.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. I think the fans have been ready to see something like this happen. That's why I think a lot of people are going to jump on board and get on early because of what you're talking about. I think people see it now starting to come to fruition. Larry, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. We can't wait to hear you all summer long here.
Sounds great. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Larry Anderson does a great job with the Phillies and their broadcasts, and we're proud to be your official home for the Philadelphia Phillies all season long. News Radio 1070 WKOK. We'll wrap up this broadcast extravaganza as only we can in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. We did not do our sports bozo of the day. And the it's on coaching changes, and it has to do with what we saw this week with Jamie Dixon. You're like, okay, well, what does that bring up? Why does that make it the bozo of the week? Well, Jamie Dixon isn't. He's smart. And he's very smart. And here's why he's smart. He got out before they got rid of him. He probably was one mediocre season away from having his own people force him to circle the wagons. Why should he have to do that? I mean, let's see now. What's the Jamie Dixon record? And remember, it's everybody at Pitt's going to tell you they have awesome and incredible basketball history. It's off the charts on the whole thing. And as I said earlier, I thought Pitt over the last 25 years, to me, is probably one of the top 25 teams, or over the last 15 years, probably one of the top 25 teams. So let's just see how disgusting his record was at Pitt. He reached the NCAA tournament 11 times in 13 years. Okay. And obviously people want more. But when you look at what he did, he really did a remarkable job. Sweet 16. He went three times out of the total of seven in the history of Pitt basketball. Pitt made the NCAA tournament 15 times before he became a coach there. They made it 11 under him. What does it tell you? But here is today's fan, and maybe to a point media mentality. The media mostly just reports, but there's some commentators. Right? If you make the tournament, you can make the tournament a couple of years in a row, but if you don't then win a game, it may be the third time through, got a problem. Okay, now you make the tournament, you win a game. But if you don't get past the round of 32 for a couple of years in a row, If you make the Sweet 16 a couple of years in a row, but don't make it to the Elite Eight, That's where your own success becomes part of your uneasiness. And Jamie Dixon got out before the uneasiness set in. There are some people over time that have been brilliant at handling this. Brilliant. Of staying ahead of the posse before the posse catches up to you. I want to tell you one of the nicest guys I have ever met in this run of my career is Lon Kruger, who's now the head coach at Oklahoma. I first met him when he was at Illinois. Couldn't have been better to deal with. I remember one time I had to do a live shot for television at the Sweet 16 in Atlanta. And Phillips Arena is across the street from the Georgia Dome. Well, they couldn't do the live shot inside the Georgia Dome, so I had to walk across the street to Phillips Arena where the Spurs were about to play the Atlanta Hawks, and Kruger was the head coach of the Hawks. As soon as he saw me, walked in, he came up, he looks at me, he goes, "Hey, Penn State!" I said, "Yeah, well," he said, reintroduce myself to him. And then he stood there and he talked to me for about 10 minutes. This is before they're going to play the Spurs, right? He got a five-year contract. Well, guess what? Lon Kruger has coached six different schools, plus the Atlanta Hawks, in his 34-year coaching career. He has never stayed anywhere longer than seven seasons. He always got out of Dodge before Dodge decided that they needed a new sheriff. Buzz Williams did that last year at Marquette, or a couple of years ago at Marquette. He got out because they were starting to buzz around there and around him as to what was going on. You know, you're not taking Marquette far enough. Most people don't know what their program is, but that's a different story for a different day. Now, here's the best one of all time. Oliver Purnell. Oliver Purnell coached 27 years in Division I before he was finally fired. 27 years before he was fired. You'll love this, Sean. Through his first 22 years, you know how many games over 500 Oliver Purnell was? 10. Do you know how many NCAA tournament wins he had? None. Yet, not one time was Oliver Purnell on the hot seat for his job because he always got out of Dodge. He spent 3 years at Radford, 3 years at Old Dominion, 9 years at Dayton, 7 years at Clemson, 5 years at DePaul, and finally got fired at DePaul. He changed jobs once every 5.4 years. His league record, now this is his league record. Now remember, you know, you're taking jobs where you're getting some reclamation projects. Okay, that's one of the reasons why the job is open, all right? His league record in his career. And again, I am not disparaging Oliver Purnell, a really great guy. I've met him several times because some of these stops he coached against Penn State. Okay? You look out, hey, it's Oliver Purnell again. Okay? You know what his league record was? 186 and 236. He was 50 games under 500 in league play. Yet, he was able to parlay one job into another job, into another job, and he always got out of Dodge before the posse showed up. That's what Jamie Dixon did this week. Pitt fans don't want to hear that, but I'm sorry, it's just the way it goes. There's an art form to this. I mean, a guy goes 27 years and he changed jobs on his own before they walked in and said, you're not ready. Dino Gaudio took over at Wake Forest and was coaching there. And he got Wake Forest to the NCAA tournament. And they won the opening round game. And then they lost in the second round. So now the season's over. Oh, he goes back. It's the dead period in recruiting. He was just working out. Just out there working out one day, and his athletic director called him up. So he said, oh, yeah, sure, okay. So he left the workout room, went upstairs to talk to his AD, and he just thought it was just going to be one of those innocuous chit-chat things. They fired him. I'd also like to point out that was the last Wake Forest NCAA tournament win. He won a game in the NCAA tournament, then lost in round two, and they fired him. Wow. If you want to know the state of the profession, that's the state of the profession. And he took over for Skip Prosser, who died.